It is Locked On Jazz for the 26th of August. Can Donovan Mitchell really get better? And Andy Larson kicks off the interview series with us. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow!
Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. We are free and on all platforms. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, Locked On Jazz, or subscribe and follow on any of your podcast providers. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show. Greatly appreciate it. Andy Larson will kick off the interview series. Thanks to Ron Boone for the rest of the week and spending the time with us. That was kind of great. Love that. And we'll hopefully have Tony Jones, Thurl Bailey, all sorts of others coming your direction this week. Today's show brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. Tell them Locked On sent you. So I keep saying that I think the two teams in the West that I think are going to get better could be the Phoenix Suns, because Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, and Devin Booker all improve. The Dallas Mavericks because of Luka, and the Utah Jazz because of Donovan. So I guess that's three teams. Luka, if he improves, really becomes the best player in the NBA, and he very well may do that. So is it fair to think that Donovan Mitchell can actually get better? I think that there's a few angles on this. One is he's only in his fifth year in the NBA. I think we really are forgetting still how young of a player he is. And I go back to like when his very, very early days, and you know, some of the people actually thought he was Allen Iverson. Like that was the player that he reminded them of, with his ability. And you actually look at Iverson, and Iverson started his career at 24 points a game as a rookie, then went down to 22. Then he goes to 27, and he actually led the league. He jumps to 28 in his fourth year. He goes to 31 in his next two seasons, leading the team. So he goes from 24 down to 22, up to 27, to 28, to 31, to 31. Donovan has gone from 21 to 24 to 24 and jumped to 26 last year. And there's no question that what he did in the bubble against the Denver Nuggets kind of gave him the suddenly realization of what he could do. If you go back, you know, prior, obviously, that miserable playoff series, he explodes for 36 points a game against the Denver Nuggets in that seven-game series. He explodes again this year for 35 points a game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in the six-game series against the LA Clippers, after averaging 29 against Memphis, but playing 120 minutes, if you recall. Donovan in the playoffs this year played 346 minutes and scored 323 points. 346 minutes and scored 323 points. I mean, he literally came about scored a point a minute played. He averaged 30 minutes a game against Memphis, scored 29 points, played 38 minutes a game against the Clippers, scored 35 points. So he did, I think, again, kind of hit this level of like increasing his ability to score and what he can do. What's crazy is how much better Donovan got last year than the year prior. I don't think that's been talked about enough. He increased his shots by a shot a game, took two more threes a game. He shot 2 percentage points better on his three-point percentage than he did prior. His effective field goal percentage went up a point. His free throws are right, always fabulous. His rebounding was the same. His assists went up a full assist a game. And then his pick and roll was a lot better. You know, that's the other aspect of this, is that he played pick and roll better last year. He actually didn't play pick and roll as much. Mike Conley stepped forward and had a much better year. And so the Jazz actually ran him on the pick and roll less than they did the year prior, and he got better at it. Like, he became a better pick and roll player last year. He and Mike Conley were both about the same, 1.07, I think it was, points per pick and roll. And really what Donovan was unbelievable with Rudy. He and Derek weren't that great together. Donovan was, if I remember, 1.1, 1.09 with Rudy, which makes sense. They've spent, you know, they're spending more and more time together. And Donovan, a year before, was at 1.04 points per pick and roll. So he went from 1.04 to, I think, 1.06, 1.07. He went with Rudy. He kind of stayed at 1.09 to 1.1 and got even better with that connection with Rudy. And now we'll see whether he can play with Hassan Whiteside or not. We certainly don't know that. The two players we've often compared him to are Bradley Beal and Damian Lillard. And I think there's comps to both. He's kind of a hybrid of both. Beal starts his career at 19 years old. And so you almost have to pick up Beal at 21, where he averages 15, then 17, then 23, then he stymies. He goes from, at 25 years old, he averages 26 points a game. That's right about where Donovan was last year at 24. The next year, Beal comes out and scores 31 points a game. He does it by taking three more shots a game, one more three a game. His three-point percentage actually doesn't get better. It actually goes down. And he goes from 5.5 free throws a game to 8. Donovan went from 4.5 free throws to 6. Can Donovan suddenly get to 8 free throws a game? Because that would suddenly start projecting him up to some crazy numbers as a 30-point-a-game scorer. In the playoff series, he took 45 free throws against the Clippers in 6 games. He took 31 in 4 games against Memphis. So he took 86 free throws in 10 games. That's at 8.6 free throws per game, which is right about what Bradley Beal's done at 8 free throws a game. And you probably don't want to, you know, play quite as physically in the regular season. So Beal makes that jump at 25 years old from 26 to 30 points a game, 31 points a game along the way. Now, the thing is, Donovan's usage rate is already pretty mammoth and Beal took his usage rate to 34%. Donovan's usage rate was at 34% last year. So Donovan already had the usage rate there. The other one we often compare Donovan to is Damian Lillard. And again, you know, we're taking the elite of the league. And Dame enters the league at 22, which is pretty similar to Don. So he goes 19, 20, 21, 25. His fifth year, he jumps to 27 points a game. He does it by simply the same concept. One more free throw a game. He actually, at that point, was already taking 8 threes a game. He takes his jump from 27 points a game to 30, and he does it at 29 years old. He does it by adding one more free throw and going from 8 threes a game to 10 threes a game. The one thing on Dame, his usage rate has actually never exceeded the number of that you're talking about Donovan at right now. Dame's usage rate is at 31.5, and that's the highest he's been his entire career. So Donovan is running at a usage rate that's much higher than Dame's ever been. And if Donovan's going to, you know, it's just a question of what your role on the team is. But this is where, you know, I do think Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker all get a little bit better. I think that, and Devin Booker's kind of at this same age point. I do think that obviously Luka just continues to get better, crazy as that might be. And then I think Donovan gets better. You know, Booker's at 24 years old also. He's gone from 27 to 26 points a game. His free throws have actually dropped this last year. His three-point attempts have dropped. He actually has become more of a mid. So he doesn't seem to actually, you know, we'll see whether he takes the trajectory. But the question for Donovan is, can you get the free throws to 8 a game? Can you get the three attempts to 10 a game? Like, kind of crazy to look at. Andy Larson actually coming up in this interview series, which we've actually already completed, will touch on some of this and his vision of this. It's an interesting idea. That'll be later in the series of interviews with Andy, probably next week for you on that. So can Donovan Mitchell get better? Absolutely. Like, you look at he's an all-star level player. You look at all-star level players in their fifth years in the league, they take a step. That's when they get a step back. They continue to take these steps. And the young players in this league are going to continue to make the strides. And that's what makes Phoenix and Dallas and Utah particularly interesting to me in the West, whereas Golden State, LA, Portland, I don't see it. Clippers, I don't see another step coming from anyone on those rosters the way I do for these. All right, Andy Larson, we're going to review last year, the painful loss, how the Jazz were so great, all of that. And then next week with Andy Larson, we'll look at the offseason moves, evaluate those, and then look at the entire Western Conference. Always fun. Andy and I will get into rabbit holes and all of that. Today's show is brought to you by my friends over at Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. It was a great pleasure earlier this week to send Jeremy over to see Josh at the Linden store. If you're going to stop by Murdoch Hyundai, please email me first at dlock@09@gmail.com, and I'll set you up with a VIP meeting. The Hyundai lineup's amazing. I'm driving the Sonata right now. I just finished with the Elantra, so I'm getting exposed to their sedans right now, and they're great. The SUVs, I've already bought two Santa Fes, so I'm in on that. The smaller Kona, the beautiful Palisade. Would love one of those. They are just gorgeous. So I'll check it out. Murdoch Hyundai, located 4646 South State Street, also located in Linden and in Logan. Today's show is brought to you by Sweatblock. It is better than any antiperspirant. If you are an excessive sweater, this is the answer. Doctor created, doctor recommended. This is crazy. It works up to 7 days per use. The dry shirt guarantee is coming to you from Sweatblock. They've been a bestseller on Amazon for the past 10 years, and now you can use the promo code LOCKEDON at sweatblock.com to get 20% off. Sweatblock is stronger and more effective than most clinical antiperspirants. You simply apply it at night before bedtime, go to bed. The next morning you wake up, you wash, you go about your day. You are sweat-free, guaranteed. Try Sweatblock. Use it once or twice a week. It keeps you dry all the time. No more pitting out. No more walking around with your elbows down because you don't want anyone to see the pit stains. No more big presentation and you pit out. No more poor high school kids that are feeling bad. It's a great answer for you. You can wear whatever you want. You have a little secret confidence to what's going on. It's all at Sweatblock. Check it out, sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON. The summer interview series continues. It's kind of almost a fall interview series at this point. Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune, COVID data expert, NBA Jazz beat writer. I will not ask you about the Delta variant. I just know it's not good. How's that?
I think that's right. So good. I would rather talk about the Jazz with you anyway.
Let's go backwards to start. We've kind of followed the same pattern, talking to Ron Boone and talking to other people. We'll continue because I think it's interesting for those listeners that actually and viewers who actually stay with us for all of these. You get the different perspective from everyone, and I think there's a lot of different angles to take place. But we'll start today kind of back in L.A. and that stunning Game 6 loss. Like, I remember at a commercial break in that game, the Jazz are ahead. I turned to Ron. It might be my fault that this happened next. And I was like, oh, my gosh, calling a Western Conference Finals would be unbelievable. And then what happened next was unbelievable. When you, after the stunning kind of way that they lost, what was your take as you left the building? That maybe it's not left the building, because I think we left the building flabbergasted. When you like either landed back in Salt Lake or got settled again, what was your take?
I think my immediate thought was like essentially that what everyone had been saying about the Jazz all year long, kind of the haters' opinion, if you will, kind of held up, right? Like some of the doubters had good points about the Jazz not being athletic enough, about them not being good enough defensively on the perimeter to hold up in playoff circumstances. I mean, it was really, if you go back and watch Game 5 and Game 6, it was Reggie Jackson who killed the Jazz, right? Like, it was Reggie Jackson getting past Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley a little bit of Game 6, and certainly Jordan Clarkson. And just the Jazz not having an answer for that. You know, Rudy Gobert can rotate over, but then that means an open three. And so, you know, the Jazz lacked a lot of the versatility needed. They lacked a lot of the, I think, defensive toughness needed in order to do anything. I mean, look, the Jazz gave up 130 defensive rating in that series, in the Clippers series. So it's not even just that Game 6 they couldn't defend the entire series. And then, you know, obviously you go back to last season with the Denver Nuggets loss, where they had some of the same, I think they were different perimeter defensive issues, but they were perimeter defensive issues. And so, you know, that was kind of my thought, is like, hey, you know, this team had a lot going for it. It was legitimately one of the best regular season teams of all time. But I think they knew only one or two ways to win. And when, you know, the opponent threw paper and the Jazz threw their traditional rock, they didn't have a lot of answers for it.
If the Jazz had been the two seed and played the route the Suns played, what would we be talking about right now?
I think they probably lose in the Western Conference Finals. You know, I think so. And it feels a lot better for Jazz fans, I think, to get to the Conference Finals rather than just the second round. But I still think that they lose to either the Phoenix Suns or the, you know, obviously the Clippers. I think ultimately Chris Paul and Devin Booker are difficult to defend too, with the kind of the guards that the Jazz have. And, you know, I think it is a better matchup because you've got DeAndre Ayton, who is someone that, you know, Rudy Gobert can more traditionally defend and help off on and et cetera. But, you know, I do think that that's a team, again, with kind of more defensive, I guess, more offensive problems that the Jazz, I think, would have had struggles defending, like they did show in the regular season, right? Like, I mean, the Suns beat the Jazz three times last year in the regular season. So, I think obviously regular season isn't playoffs. The Jazz showed that last year, but I do think that it would have been better if they had an easier path. And yet, like in the end, you know, I don't think that they were, you know, were going to win a title last year just based on how the team was built.
The Jazz played the Clippers kind of early in the year. I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was the night in which they suddenly put Marcus Morris at the center and spaced him to the corner and went on that run late. And I don't remember if the Jazz won that game. The Jazz beat the Clippers like 106-101 on January 1st, but I think it's a little later than that.
Yeah, it was their second game. I know, or maybe it was their third game, because the second game they didn't play any of their stars. The third game was the game you're talking about where they went small for 6 minutes in the fourth quarter, and the Jazz ended up losing that game. As kind of a result of that run that the Clippers went on.
It's almost as though the weakness was exposed on that night, and then the Jazz somehow like dodged the way through the rest of the league without everyone like picking up on it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's one theory. The other one I have is that, you know, it's like one of these things you talk about it a lot and a lot, a lot. And then you're like, oh God, like that actually really mattered. So 2 years ago, the Jazz made 5 roster changes. All of them were offense for defense. And it was obvious they had to, right? They had played Houston and Golden State. And even when the defense was good, the offense wasn't good enough to actually, like, let them win a playoff game. So they made 5 changes that were all offense for defense. Since those changes, when Rudy Gobert has been off the floor defensively, regardless if it's Tony Bradley or Derek Favors, the defense has been just awful.
Mm-hmm.
Awful. Like, is that actually the whole thing here, that all someone has to do right now is just negate Rudy Gobert? Like, that the Clippers did the equivalent, right, by putting all 5 smalls and making Rudy play in the corner. Then they basically took him out of the game in that game in the regular season, and then they tried the same thing. That's basically the same principle, is that if Rudy's not involved, the Jazz defense has been really bad for 2 years in a row. Is that the takeaway that actually – and that's where I'm not sure Phoenix or Denver or even the Lakers could have exposed that the same way the Clippers did. That's my one little thing where I'm not sure I totally agree with your theory on that they would have lost somewhere along the way, because, I mean, obviously health matters. But, like, DeAndre Ayton's on the floor. Rudy Gobert is impacting every defensive play still.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, you know. But I also then go back then two series ago with the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic pick and roll. And, you know, Jokic and Ayton are obviously very different players. Jokic is a lot better. But, I think that's fair. But I also know that there are a lot of NBA teams around the league that are capable of small ball. I mean, I think certainly Milwaukee is, certainly, you know, the Brooklyn Nets would be. The Clippers were, I think you're right, probably the best Western Conference team at that. But then, okay, then you get to the NBA Finals and you run into a team that can do it and probably beat the Jazz with it, right? So I think you're totally right, though, that it is kind of a roster skill set issue, right? Like, where you did – the Jazz went so offensively oriented, and I think rightfully so, and said, hey, you know, we need to put all of our chips around Rudy Gobert as a good defender. But you're right. Like, you can – the thing about defense differently than offense is you can kind of – I don't want to say scheme a guy out of a game, because I think even Rudy was still moderately impactful during those Clippers series. But, like, if you're just giving him help in recover situations over and over again with 15 seconds left on the shot clock, like, you just don't really have a chance, you know? Like, the NBA teams are going to be good enough at knocking down those threes for the most part to beat you. And so I think that's where, we have seen for the past two seasons, just whether or not being able to stop Jamal Murray, giving him two 50-point games in a series, or, again, the likes of Reggie Jackson breaking you out of beating one of the best, again, regular season teams of all time. I think clearly it's Rudy Gobert and everyone else defensively on this roster. And, you know, I think we can quibble about whether or not that's been fixed or helped in some way. But I don't think that, it's definitely a weakness of how the roster has been built right now.
All right. If I'm listening right now, I'm a Jazz fan, I'm screaming at us. But they were injuries. There were injuries. There were injuries. So there's three questions, I think, that are lingering here. One of them is, what about the injuries? Two is, how are they the best regular season team or one of the best ever? And three is my new theory on 15%. We'll touch on all three of those when we continue with Andy Larson in our summer interview series here on Locked On Jazz. Free and available for you on all platforms. It is Locked On Jazz. Hope you're enjoying Andy Larson. Feel free to hit him up with an @AndyLarson, @AndyBLarson. Thank you for joining the show. We appreciate his time. Today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Rock Auto, they've been in business for 20 years serving do-it-yourselfers and serving the professionals the same. There's no reason for you to spend 30, 50, even 100% more on parts from a chain store or car dealership when you can go to Rock Auto and get reliably low prices for every customer. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Like, the Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from a chain store. It's $216 from Rock Auto. Go and explore the old school, easy to use website today and find the solution for your auto part needs. It does not matter whether you are a do-it-yourselfer or whether you are a pro. Rock Auto is a family business who's been treating all of you the same the whole time. So what are your auto part needs? Rock Auto has it. It can be a carpet. It can be a brake lamp part. It can be a tail lamp, motor oil, all of it there for you. Write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section when you check out, please. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck and write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Today's show is also brought to you by Built Bar, the great tasting candy bar. Oh, excuse me, protein bar. Built Bar, 100% chocolate, 100% delicious, healthy, high protein, low calorie, all the yum. And if you're watching on YouTube, here it is. Oh, but this is a prized possession. This is a coconut brownie chunk bar that I still have because I made that order. This is not some false advertising. Here it is. Here's the wrapper. There's yesterday's wrapper. They're all around the house. They're Built Bars. Check it out. The macros are amazing. You can't believe you can get a protein bar that tastes this good with 130 calories, 2.5 fat grams, 4 net carbs, 4 sugar, 17 grams of protein. It's all at built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off when you check out. It's LOCKED15 to get 15% off at built.com. Okay, everybody can stop screaming at me and Andy. We will address the fact that Donovan Mitchell was on a leg and Mike Conley was on no legs. And then we also will address a comment Andy keeps referencing, which is, hey, they were one of the great regular season teams of all time. And then I have my new, like, I have a bunch of theories about, like, where the NBA is. We're going to get into a bunch of them over this kind of extended period of time, but we'll get into one of them, which is 15%. All right. So we do all this evaluation. The defense definitely fell apart. Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell are not making all defense anytime soon. But, like, Donovan Mitchell was pretty horrendous defensively in game 6. Understandably so. Like, he couldn't move. And Mike Conley couldn't move either. So Like, I got it. Like, everyone's got injuries. The Lakers get the loudest megaphone to hear. But if you're kind of evaluating that season, how much do you say, well, wait a sec, Donovan and Mike were just not right, and I can't just make kind of definitive statements because of that?
Yeah, you know, I think a little bit. And you know, I think Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley look a lot better defensively if they're not injured, right? Like, I think ultimately Donovan was incredible offensively, right? Like, just put up shots and made them at such a rate that it kind of didn't matter what else he, you know, he clearly deserved to be out on the court. But defensively, yeah, he was a nightmare, you know? He was getting driven by and helping in weird situations because I think once the Jazz kind of were going or allowing that huge Clippers run, he wanted to try to make a play defensively, but that often left whoever he was leaving open from three. You know, I think Mike Conley was really good in the regular season defensively last year. And I think that was kind of his ability to shade plays where it matters. You know, it's not that he's a physical defender, but he can get around screens. It's that he can get people to Rudy Gobert. And then, you know, because of his, you know, tenure in the league, he's good at getting steals and good at reading a defense in a team kind of way. So I think, you know, healthy Mike Conley really helps. I think healthy Donovan Mitchell is less. I don't think regular season Donovan Mitchell is a good defender. You know, as much as he says he would like to become that, he hasn't been that in his NBA career. So until further notice, we're going to assume that he's probably a below average defender. And then, you know, it's kind of about, is that better than the kind of horrific defender that he was in game six? Probably, yeah. And, you know, some of those issues are gone. Jordan Clarkson doesn't have that same excuse, and Jordan Clarkson got beat a lot, right? And I thought Royce O'Neal was decent and actually was maybe one of the second best Jazz player in game six, and yet still is not kind of a one-man defensive answer in the way that, you know, it's just really hard to be in the NBA right now. So in the end, I think the injury certainly hurt. You know, I think one of the ones that we don't talk about is Rudy Gobert gets hurt early in game six and, you know, plays through it, but clearly wasn't helping in recovering in the same way. Now, you were down to a 3-2 deficit before that. And so, again, it's not a sure thing that if, hey, Rudy doesn't get hurt, then you're in a good spot. But, you know, I do think sometimes that's forgotten as we analyze Rudy's performance in particular that game. Is, yeah, it wasn't the same Rudy that we're used to because he was playing at like 75% trying to play through this injury.
All right, let's take a step even further back. You've referenced it, one of the great regular season teams. How'd they do it? How did they become one of the great regular season teams? I would pause for a moment, just either because I'm understand the NBA after covering it for 30 years, like I'm really old, or two, that I'm a Pollyanna homer. You can decide which. By the way, having a conversation about your team in a championship light is an incredible feat and honor as a fan. Like, let's make sure we understand the context of this conversation is like, why didn't they win the title? That is not a conversation that most teams ever get to have. So let's make sure that's good. Now, with that said, backwards, how did they become this? What did they do? What was the reason they were such a great regular season team?
Yeah, I mean, look, just and to back that up, I mean, I think they are sixth or seventh all time in terms of point differential just throughout the season. And because they were blowing teams out, you know, I used the analogy earlier of rock, paper, scissors. They had the biggest, baddest rock that we've seen in some time. You know, they had this amazing attack of a three-point shooting around Rudy Gobert, of transition aggressiveness and getting those threes up. And 8 3-point shooters on the roster and guys who were just efficient as all get out in terms of making those plays. I mean, they have 5 different pick and roll guys who are very good to excellent in the synergy metrics, right? Guys who are running screens with Rudy Gobert and are making the right decision. And they make right decisions in different ways, right? Like Joe Ingles is not as good at kicking out to the 3-point shooters as Donovan Mitchell is. You know, Mike Conley's better at throwing lobs to Rudy Gobert than the others are. And yet they had such efficient pick and roll players and spacing the floor around them that it was really hard to defend the Jazz. And, you know, I don't think the Clippers didn't figure it out defensively. the Grizzlies didn't figure out it defensively. The offense was not the problem. You know, I think that's an important thing to realize is like, hey, this was still a very good offensive team in the playoffs. I mean, to be able to put up kind of 115, 120 offensive ratings in the playoffs when the game's changing and everything else is, you know, fouls are being called less and everything else, like the offensive formula still worked. It's just, again, the defense that let them down. But that tremendous kind of rock they had was, one of the best regular season weapons we've ever seen.
The transition stuff was really interesting, right?
It was. And that was like a smart Quinn thing coming into the year. You and I both know Quinn's working on stuff every year to like change what the Jazz bring. What is it that we're going to do differently and better this season to make us a better team? And that was Quinn's kind of key insight last year of like, hey, we're going to be really aggressive in transition and get a ton of points from it and you know, just kind of blow teams out. And they did.
One of the stories I thought got covered the least is actually the fact that he made that change during the pandemic.
During the bubble.
That change actually happened in the bubble. If you go, nobody really paid attention to the whatever was it, 8 bubble games or whatever they played, and you're doing it with different teams, and you know only like 5 of them seem real. And then all of a sudden, I remember I looked back on cleaning the glass and it was like percentage of threes 45%, 48%, 52%, 53%. Like I was like, wait, this change happened. Quinn went to the and actually I've talked to him about this. It's pretty interesting. His point is that you don't really know a player until you have them. Hmm. So, like, you can look at Bojan Bogdanović and you can try to figure out who he is as a player, but you don't really get it until he's yours. And, like, you can add Jordan Clarkson in the middle of the year, but you can't actually adapt to Jordan Clarkson until you have a moment once the season's over. So he used that time to adapt to who Bojan Bogdanović and Jordan Clarkson really were and what he understood he had at that point compared to what he had before. Pretty brilliant.
Well, and I think like I wonder if Bogey's absence last year triggered some of that, right? Like I remember talking to Quinn and he said, you know, was basically trying to figure out how they were going to make up all these 3-point shots that Bogey takes and makes that are a kind of, again, a bedrock of the Jazz's offense, right? Like him being able to make shots at 40% is a really big deal given his volume. And the way to make up the volume was to be more aggressive in taking the shot, either in pick and roll pull-ups from beyond the arc or in transition. And, you know, you're right that they showed that at the in the bubble last year and then really showed it in the regular season and heck, in the playoffs too last year.
Okay, here's my thought. And this gets into a bigger picture. We'll get into this deeper on our third day worth of shows here. But just a quick thought, 15% theory. The Jazz had like 15%, 20% chance to win the title.
Yeah.
It didn't come up. They have probably 15 or 20% chance again. Milwaukee had a 15 or 20% chance, and they lost to Toronto in a double overtime game 3 that didn't go their direction when they were up 2-0. And if they won it, maybe that was their 20%. The next year, they had a 15 or 20% chance to win the title again, and they ran into the wrong Miami team and had all sorts of internal craziness because of the Jacob Blake stuff. They had a 15 to 20% chance this time, and it came up for them. And they're probably going to have a 15 to 20% chance next year, and they're not going to win it. Maybe the fact is the Jazz had a 15 to 20% chance to win it, which is amazing. But like 15 to 20% chance means you actually don't win it 1 out of 5 times.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, I would say like the very best teams have something like a 50% chance, right? Like 50 rather than 15 is, you know, if you've got LeBron James on your team in the peak of his career, or, you know, I honestly think the Brooklyn Nets coming up next year, maybe at that 50% given where they are with kind of their injuries. But, you know, yeah, I mean, if Kevin Durant's toe's not on the line, the Milwaukee Bucks aren't playing in the finals or even the conference finals, right? So, yes, it's, you know, to some extent, this is hugely luck. And there's no question that, for example, the Suns got far more lucky than the Jazz did in terms of when the playoffs happened, their health, and who they faced during the playoffs. And that being said, you know, the Suns lost in the finals too. So I think you're right. The Jazz had a, you know, 15% chance of winning the NBA Finals. They didn't. I think we've seen multiple teams in the last couple of years with those kind of odds get there. You know, the Toronto Raptors, I think, were a 15% team too that ended up with getting some good luck and winning it. But you're right. Like, I think the Jazz have positioned themselves quite well, maybe as well as they can. You know, I think that's to be discussed. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about kind of percentage points there. And the truth is, without a all-timer like a Kevin Durant or a LeBron James, this is kind of how you build a title contention team.
All right. So what did they do to build that title contender team? That's what we'll talk with Andy Larson about on our next show in summer interview series. Three shows worth of Andy Larson brilliance coming. You can grab them in the Salt Lake Tribune. You can subscribe to the Salt Lake Tribune. You can support local journalism. You can do all those good things. This is Locked On Jazz right now. Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On Today. Have a good one.